Psalm 111. Praise the Lord. I will extol the Lord with all my heart in the council of the upright and in the assembly. Great are the works of the Lord. They are pondered by all who delight in them. Glorious and majestic are his deeds, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wonders to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and compassionate. He provides food for those who fear him. He remembers his covenant forever. He has shown his people the power of his works, giving them the lands of other nations. The works of his hands are faithful and just. All his precepts are trustworthy. They are established forever and ever, enacted in faithfulness and uprightness. He provided redemption for his people. He ordained his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise.
How often it happens, the little child comes running up to mom. Mommy, mommy, I need. Or, daddy, he hit me. Daddy, she took my toy. That's the way kids are. They come running to their parents, and they come running because they most often have issues. Something they need, something they want, some help they have to have. And that makes it so very special when one of our little children come running up to us and they say, Mommy, Mommy, and you're just expecting, now what? And they say, I love you. Daddy, you're the greatest. Boy, that's special. Probably because it just doesn't happen all that often. And then I think the way I am, and the fact that I am so often like that little child when I come to my parent God, and I run to God, and I come because I've got this problem, I've got this hurt, I've got this need, I've got this want. God, help me. God, do this. It's usually all about me. And the amazing thing, the wonderful thing, is that, you know what God does when I come about me? God says, come on anyway, just like you do. When your child comes and says, I need, I want, and you say, come on. God does that. He welcomes us just like mom does, just like dad does. And yet, when I think a little bit, when I take a little bit more time about how I ought to relate to God, and when I listen to what Jesus said when, you know, his disciples said to him, teach us about prayer. And when Jesus started talking to them about prayer, the thing that comes obvious when you listen to the prayer is that Jesus said, it's not all about me. It's about God, first of all. Put God first. It's about God's name. It's about God's kingdom. It's about God's will. That first. And so this morning, I guess I invite you to try to act a little bit more grown up. Although we grown-ups don't do it all that well either. But maybe we can start this morning by recognizing something that Rick Warren starts off his purpose-driven life with almost right at the very beginning, is just this simple statement. It's not all about me. Hallowed be your name, O God. That's what Jesus says to a disciple. When you pray, say, Father, hallowed be your name. Well, what's the big deal about a name? I chose Psalm 111 this morning because in Psalm 111 verse 9 has this beautiful little refrain or a little kind of a high point of the whole psalm. Holy and awesome is God's name. Now, I hear that and I think, I would really expect that the psalmist would have said something about, holy and awesome is God. Jesus says, when you pray, you say, hallowed be your name. And I would think Jesus would have said, when you pray and you're talking with God, you'd say, oh God, you are holy. Hallowed be your person. We're to honor God, and it's true, of course. But what's this business about name? And when you read the Bible, there's so many different references and places where the name of God is to be lifted up. We started the service this morning with Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. And then it goes on and talks about all the great things that God did when he made the world. Psalm 96 is another one of the Psalms that emphasizes the name of God. Sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord. Praise his name. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Bring an offering. Come into his courts. A name. There's something more to a name than just the way it sounds and just the words that come out. It represents, doesn't it? Everything there is about the person. It's also how tied together in that name. There's an interesting reference in Psalm 9. Psalm 9 verse 10. It says, those who know your name trust in you. Talking about God. Those who know your name. Now, what does that mean? Now, does that mean that if you know one of those special names of God, there's dozens of different names of God that are found in the Bible, and all you have to do is somehow know that right word, that name, and then that's automatic about trust? No, we know that that's not what that's all about. You know, you might know, as the Jewish people did, there's a special name for God, Yahweh. We're not even sure how to pronounce it, but it had to do not just with some sounds that came out of a mouth. It has to do with the God who says, I am, who exists. It's important to know that being, not just the name. Or there's other names, Adonai. Not enough just to say, Adonai, oh, now I put my trust in you. Knowing that Adonai means the one who is the Lord of all. Or El Shaddai is another one. And that has to do with the Almighty. Not just enough to say a word. It means knowing the God who is. Knowing the God who is Lord. The God who is the Almighty. And so Psalm 111, as Laura read it this morning, I think gets to its high point when it says, holy and awesome is his name. But you know what it's been doing all the way up to it? It's been leading up to that by not saying words and sounds. It's been talking about the God. The person, the character, the nature of God. It's talked about how great are the works of the Lord. Glorious and majestic are all of God's deeds. His righteousness endures forever. It's been talking about God's works. It's been talking about how great and wonderful is the character of God. He's caused his wonders. The Lord is gracious, compassionate. Provides food for those who fear him, remembers his covenant, shown his people the power of his works. The works of his hands are faithful, just. All his precepts are trustworthy. All these things that say, this is the character, this is who God is, trustworthy, just, merciful, faithful, all those things. And talks about his nature. He provides redemption. God sees his people in their trouble, and he redeems them. He brings them back. That's just the nature of God. He ordained his covenant forever. He makes a promise, and he keeps it, and he says, you are my people, I am your God, forever and ever. All of that goes into what the psalmist then says. Holy and awesome is his name. Holy and awesome is God. Maybe we can think about a signature. You know, when you write something on a piece of paper, it's not just squiggles. There's something about that ink on paper that has some very important meaning. Try, you've done it. You've written the check. You've sent it off to a company or wherever. And they try to put it in the bank, and it gets kicked back out because there was no signature on it. It was that little piece of ink on paper missing. Or You signed something in the wrong place. Claire, you have to go back to the post office. There's a message on the answering machine that came after you were gone Friday that you signed a paper in the wrong place, that we will not get our refund from the post office until you sign your signature in the right place. So, that's more than just a little ink. There's something about a signature. It has to do with the person. It has to do with you. It has to do with me. It stands for. That's the big deal about a name. Hallowed be God's name. Hallowed be God. Now, what does it mean to hallow? That's the next question. That's not a very common word. Not one I use in every day. Really, you know, little children hear it, hallowed be your name, and they think, hollow? Hollow? I know what hollow is. Empty. Well, hallowed is just actually just the opposite of hallowed. But it's a word that Jesus uses when he teaches us to pray, and it comes from the same root word that we often use, or that we use to describe as something being holy. And so when you put it in a verb form, when you say, make holy the name, treat your name as holy. That's our prayer, that people will treat the name of God as something which is holy. Now, holy is something that I often associate as, you know, better than the average, as perfect. Well, that's part of the conduct, kind of the idea of holy. But really, literally, what that word means, to be holy is to be different, to be separate from. And so you pick up this book, and oftentimes, this one doesn't have it on the cover, but oftentimes it will say Holy Bible. And it does that because there's something different about this book. That's what it means. It's unique from all the other books that you can find in my library or any big library downtown or the National Archives or whatever. There's something unique, different about this book. Or we talk about a temple being a holy place. It means it's different than other buildings. And we are to keep the Lord's Day as a holy day. Sunday is to be a day separate from the other six. Different, unique. Well, when we say something about, we don't make these things holy. We don't, by putting the word holy on this, make this book holy. It already is. It's separate. It's because of its nature. And so we don't, when we say something about hallowing or making holy the name of God, doesn't mean we can do something to make it more holy than it was. It already is special. God is absolutely unique, absolutely different than we are. And our job is to recognize that and to live in that. The point is whether our lives are showing that we know God to be totally different, way beyond us. I think the word that we need to remember, hallowed doesn't covet it, because it's such an unusual word, we don't use it, but maybe the word reverence. Reverence is what this petition, this part of it, is all about. That we have reverence for God and for the name of God. Now, I have a little problem with that word too, because too often people put that in front of my name. They think, you know, I've given them the title, the Reverend Al Gelder. And I'm not real crazy about that, because I realize all too much that I'm not reverend. I'm not different than anybody else. So I go into the hospital on a Monday morning and they cut my throat and I bleed, just like you do if that happens to you. You know, I've got my same issues. I have my down days. And I have my giving in to temptations. When Jan goes to bed and I sneak peanuts in the middle, and they are early there in the evening before, and I know I shouldn't do that. I'm just like you. I'm not reverend in the sense of way up there, but God is. God is the one who deserves all reverence. He deserves the title and the respect. God is far beyond any of us. And we need to treat his name and his person with that reverence. As Psalm 111 verse 9 says, holy and awesome, awesome is God's name. there was a time when we lived in Michigan and Betsy sang in the Christian Learning Center choir. And it was always such a joy to hear that choir sing, because one of their favorite songs was "Our God is an Awesome God." And boy, when you get that group singing and they get into the power, they just, you could tell these people with their disabilities, but they knew that God was awesome. God deserves our reverence. But how do we do it? And that's what we need to look at. How do we reverence the name of God? And I think if you think about what it means to reverence the name of God, it means that we've got to get our head on straight, we've got to get our eyes open, we've got to get our hands involved. It starts out by getting our head on straight. We've got to know something about God. How do we revere God if we don't really know who God is? You can't show respect to somebody that you don't know. Now, I know that God exists. Now, the Bible doesn't prove it. There's no logical statements in the Bible that you put A, B, therefore C type of thing. The Bible begins with just the statement. It assumes, in the beginning, God. God was there. God exists. God is like an axiom. Now, I've forgotten just about everything I could possibly try to forget because I didn't like geometry at all. But I know there were axioms. That was one word that I remember came back into my distant memory somewhere. And I believe an axiom is one of those statements that becomes the basis for other proofs. It is not something that you prove. It's sort of like, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. You don't prove it. You just know it to be true. Or parallel lines, no matter how far you extend them, will never meet. And then that becomes the basis on which you prove some other things in angles and geometric figures and all that stuff that I forgot as soon as I possibly could. But God is an axiom. How do I know that God exists? Well, there are proofs. There are evidence for the fact. To me, they're very compelling evidences. I look around me at the creation, the world out there. And I have an awfully hard time believing that somehow or other this could just happen without a master designer. You've heard the example being used, somebody who's never seen a watch in his entire life, who's walking down a path in a jungle somewhere and kicks across this beautiful round thing with a case around it and opens it up and finds inside all kinds of intricate little jewels and little gears and things that spin around, and they notice that it, the hands go around in a set pattern and a set way. And, you know, you look at that thing and you say, isn't that amazing if that thing just appeared? There must have been, maybe it took a million years and all of a sudden those pieces all came together. No. You look at it and say, somebody must have designed that because that wouldn't just happen. That, to me, is a compelling evidence that there is a designer. When I look at the intricacy of the world, the vastness of the universe, the complexity of human DNA, what little I know about it, and all the other stuff, and the fact that it's alive. If you start with dead, inanimate stuff and you put it together, it doesn't just all of a sudden become alive. It's a matter of, yeah, some evidence, but to me it's a matter more of experience. Remember, we're talking about this prayer as a disciple's prayer, not Jesus' prayer. It's what we are to pray. And we start from knowing somehow that there is a God. My head gets that. I have to know there's a God in the first place. You know, you don't have to prove to me that Jan exists, because I know, I experience her presence, I experience her love and her care every day. I know that God exists because I experience the reality of it. I just have a hard time understanding scientists who can study all of the complexity of DNA and RNA or the vastness of the universe and somehow can think this was a mistake or just was a bunch of mistakes. You don't have to be a scientist to reverence God. When you know the Creator, the Provider, the Redeemer, the Parent, that's who God is. And I just know it. And I think it's so wonderful when you know and you meet scientists who look at the complexity of this all and who realize as they make new findings that they're not discovering something new or making something new. They are just unmasking something that was already there. They've learned something new that nobody knew before. Get our brain on right, knowing that there is a God. Got to do that first. And then you got to have your eyes open. Not enough to know about God. We need to live in a daily awareness that God is there and is involved. It's not just God out there, it's God down here. You know, it's so easy to get so busy and caught up in a little part of this world, a little part of our own life, that we just get all fixated there and we don't see beyond ourselves. Again, it's so easy to get, it's all about me. I don't know a lot about autism, but what I do know about it, and one of the things that makes it so difficult to deal with, is that when a person is dealing with autism, all too often you see a person who just can get so fixated on one immediate thing. Maybe it's a sound, maybe it's something in their hand, and they can't connect with anything around it, beyond it. And they just are there, and they're just rocking it, they're just doing something right in that little spot. Unable to connect. Now, as Christians, we can sometimes get fixated on ourselves and we don't get connected with the God who is all around us. And that's what makes it such an important thing, that to know that God is present. And so, you know, you go off to see the beauty of the creation. And so you get off into the woods out in Canada someplace and you find God is there. Or you start working on computer code, and you're writing all this code, and you realize, somehow or other, God is the one who made this thing all fit, makes it all work together. And I'm sitting in the middle of the night in the hospital, and that little song comes on, lullaby sound, and it means that there's been a baby that was born in the nursery at Lourdes. And I think the complexity and the incredible beauty, God was working in the middle of the night. Or when you're sound asleep, God is there. And all of those things. And the fact is, for me, as well as probably for most of us, all too often, that awareness is sporadic. I think about it, and then I forget about it. Look at a beautiful sunset and say, wow, I see the handiwork of God. But you know, every morning the sun comes up, and I maybe don't even have my eyes very wide open, and I don't even think about God in the sunrise. Just the beauty of a special one. I get a miraculous, a very special healing takes place, and we say, wow, God is so great. But when the headache just kind of goes away, we don't even think about God in those times. So reverencing God needs to be a constant prayer. The eyes have to always be open. And then our hands have to be busy. That's where the rubber really meets the road. So reverencing God isn't just about knowing, and it's not just about feeling. It's also about doing. There's a couple of very interesting verses in the prophet Ezekiel. One is found in Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 41. It says, I will accept you as a fragrant incense when I bring you out from the nations and gather you from the countries where you have been scattered. And I will be proved holy through you in the sight of the nations. God says, I will be proved holy through Israel. And this kind of same idea comes up in Ezekiel chapter 28, verse 25. This is what the sovereign Lord says. When I gather the people of Israel from the nations where they've been scattered, I will be proved holy through them in the sight of the nations. Part of that comes, of course, because of what God did. He brought back the people. But part of it is that God says, you know what? People see me as a holy God when they see you doing what you're supposed to do. When they see you living as a special people, the people of God. We know the opposite is true. How many times haven't you heard somebody talk about, you know, the reason I'm not a Christian is because those Christians, they're nothing but a bunch of hypocrites. They say one thing and they do something totally opposite. It's been in the news in the last year. There's action in Congress and the Senate to investigate some high-profile Christian ministries and leaders who have been apparently misusing all kinds of money, living with a lavish lifestyle out of what comes in through contributions. And God's name is not hallowed, is not made holy in that kind of situation. But when you pray, I want to reverence your name, God. You're committing yourself to saying, I want my life to bring honor to you, God. I want people to see you and give you respect and reverence when they look at me. Martin Luther wrote a little catechism. One of the questions is, how is God's name hallowed among us? And the answer is very simple. He said, when both our life and our doctrine are truly Christian. Get it? How is God's name hallowed? When our life, as well as our doctrine, are truly Christian. When you pray, hallowed be your name, you're committing yourself to a mighty big task. You're committing yourself to say, I want God to be lifted high. Oh, magnify, make big. Oh, exalt the name of God. And yes, God is way up there. And yet the amazing thing is that great God comes down to us, comes to our world, comes down to our level, takes on our form, and even goes to a cross. And now comes to us today and says, here, in this little ordinary thing, a piece of bread, a little cup of juice, I am here. Incredible. Isn't that an amazing God? Let's pray.